Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. And Kevin, as this year closes out, maybe it's time for us to do a retrospective on the last year at Baylor. And this week, let's start out with baseball and basketball on the previous year.
Sure. I think it's a good kind of assess where Baylor is and, you know, what has to happen for these programs moving forward, and looking forward to this discussion. So you spin the wheel and you tell me where you want to start.
Well, let's start out with baseball. Now, Baylor is on, since we've been covering them, they're on their third coach. They had Steve Smith, who had some really early success. Then they had Steve Rodriguez, who had a little bit of success, but not what they had hoped for. And Mitch Thompson, who is just getting started, but this last year was a little bit of a stumble out of the gate.
Yeah. Now, the one thing for Mitch is that you've heard this all throughout his time when he was Steve Smith's right-hand man, when they were both at Baylor in the early 20-teens. And then, of course, when Mitch was over at McLennan, how good a recruiter Mitch is. And I really hope that's the case. Now, they've had some kids that have hit the portal following this really disastrous opening year. And you hope that what he is recruiting this year for the 2024 season will be of significantly higher talent level. Now, it's going to be younger, too, because these are going to be true freshmen that are going to have to go through fall ball in September, October, that sort of thing, before they really get their feet on the ground when workouts start in January. But, you know, I think from Mitch's perspective, I know I was hard on him saying that them missing the Big 12 tournament for the first time in program history is unacceptable. And it is. I got into a debate with Matt Mosley on ESPN Central Texas on Monday when I was on his show talking about this, and he goes, well, what's the difference between missing the tournament and going 2-0 if you're the 8th seed in the Big 12 tournament? And I said, the difference is, Matt, is that you made it, and this is something that Baylor has at least always done at a bare minimum, and to miss is not acceptable. It's kind of embarrassing. And I thought, you know, so I think and I got a lot of pushback, too, when I was being very critical of this program about where it was and where it was hoping to go and that sort of thing. And said, well, if you'd seen the roster that he inherited, that he was, you know, then you would have understood that they were borderline not making it. But I'm like, there's no excuse. So when you are, he got there, what was it, June of last year when he got there? Okay. That's when most of your coaching changes take place in Division I college baseball. Okay. And you're going to have portal guys too that are going to be a part of this, but you're also in the state of Texas where it's a gold mine for talent. Whether if you want to stopgap with JUCO guys, you're right in your backyard at McLennan where you coach some of them if they hadn't been committed elsewhere, or something of that nature, or even portal guys, which they got a few portal guys. But, you know, again, it's not acceptable that they didn't make the tournament. Now, here's what I also said about this program for next year. They have to be in a position next year where there has to be marked improvement. They don't have to make the NCAA tournament. I'm not suggesting that. But I think what's reasonable to expect for this team is to finish somewhere 6th and 8th in the conference, which also means you're going to automatically make the Big 12 tournament. Now that format's going to change because you got the four new teams in there with Cincinnati, BYU, Central Florida, and Houston. But the point is that I think they should be somewhere in that range. They should be good enough to be there. If they are, let's just say that they have a similar type of season, like they did, you know, next year, like they did this year, and they still make the tournament because, heck, everyone's going to go to this thing now because of how many teams are in the league. But if it's another listless performance, and your team ERA is 6.5, like this team's was, and your batting average is around 240 or whatever it was this year, and if you get similar performances, that makes me very wary about this. And then I would say, you know what? I don't know if, you know, by the third year, you can really expect the jump. Okay. It's now, I will say this. If it's a marked improvement where, let's just say they're kind of like, oh, 24 to 28 wins. That would put them around the 500 mark during the regular season because you got 52, 55 games in a regular season. So if they're in that 500 range, making the tournament, maybe they steal a win in the conference tournament or something like that, then those would be great building blocks. There has to be marked improvement. There has to be like a 6 to 8 win improvement with this thing from last year, because the way they looked, especially, I think what bothered me more about this team, rather than the conference season, which was bad in its own right, but what really bothered me about this team was the number of Tuesday night losses that they had to programs they had no business losing to, like your Grand Canyons of the world or Abilene Christians. You know, Dallas Baptist is a different story. That's a perennial, you know, baseball power there in South Dallas. But you know what I'm saying here. It's just that or, you know, when you lose to programs like that or Tarleton. Now, they beat Tarleton they won their last four. I think what they're hoping for is that obviously they finished the season on a good note. They won their last, I think it was 4 or 5. They did get to the 20 win mark, which I think was, you know, a mental thing that they needed to get to. But they just lost too many of these games to these types of teams, which they had no business losing to. Now, baseball is a different game. I mean, heck, we just saw Oral Roberts, a team out of the Summit League, really good program though, but get to the College World Series. So it does happen. But when those programs in those Tuesday games who aren't or anything of great substance in those conferences and you're getting beat by them routinely, that was the thing that jumped out to me.
Well, the most surprising thing to me about the team this year was the pitching. And because when, you know, and I got to know Mitch a little bit when he was coaching for MCC. And one of the signatures of MCC while he was coaching there was that their pitching was really solid. And they had so many games where they gave up over 10 runs. And, you know, but part of that comes back to, it's the same thing as with football. You know, it's not the X's and O's, it's the Jimmies and Joes. But if you've got a pitcher, you got a chance. All right? And Baylor didn't have any pitching this year.
Nothing. They had nothing to really hang their hat on this year. And again, as I said routinely throughout this concluded season, that it was a transition year for them. I expected them to struggle this year. Not to this extent, but I expected them to struggle. And, but again, you know, you just have to hope that things will pick up, they'll get better, and that they will play a much better brand of baseball next year. I mean, if you have a team ERA of 6.5, you're never going to win anything.
Yeah, and the thing is that we don't really know at this point in time, because we got one data point on Mitch Thompson as a head coach at a P5.
Right.
All right. And so it could be like, you know, Matt Rhule, where, you know, that first season, everybody's kind of going, you got to be kidding me. And then it takes off.
Yeah.
Or it could be kind of like Kevin Steele, or back in the days before you were watching, Bill Beal, where they hit the ground and they stayed there. And so,
well, I mean,
you know, that's, you don't know which it is.
No, you bring up a good example with Matt Rhule, because Matt's first year was 1-11, total nightmare. And then that next year they go 7-5 or 7-6. They win that finale against Texas Tech at AT&T Stadium. Get to the Texas Bowl, beat Vanderbilt, a lot of momentum there, because they were a borderline team, because I felt like they were going to be a borderline team, bowl team that year. And then, of course, they get to the Sugar Bowl the following year to play Georgia. So, you know, it can happen. I mean, there is a bit of patience involved. I'm just, like I said, I'm just stunned by the fact that they were so bad this year, they didn't even make the tournament. That's the thing that I felt was unacceptable in this season. And I don't care if they would have gone in as the A seed and gone 2-out. Heck, Texas went in as the one seed and went 2-out. And so, you know, it is what it is.
And so let's take a look at then women's basketball. And, okay, three coaches with baseball, two coaches with basketball. Kim Mulkey was there forever. And then she went to LSU. Nikki Collin came in. And again, you have huge roster churn. And we've still got to wait. only thing for me with Nikki Collin is that I still see her as being a nice person that's good at press conferences and probably good in meetings, but I haven't seen anything in her history that indicates that she can be super successful at a high level. And the thing with Mulkey is that that woman that is a perpetually angry woman, but she takes it out on the basketball court and wins a lot of games.
Well, Kim is very driven. I mean, I think we all understand that. And then that kind of feeds off the room and her, because her players will play for her. And I think, okay, so here's where we are with Nikki. Okay, so Nikki, I think a lot of people were surprised that Baylor even won the Big 12 regular season championship last year in her first year. And of course, they lost to Texas in the Big 12 tournament championship game in Kansas City. Then they got to the tournament they were hosting, and then they got suddenly bounced by South Dakota State, which doesn't happen when you're hosting at home. Those are pretty much guaranteed two wins unless you just kind of flatline, which unfortunately Baylor did. This year, you know, they were really up and down. You know, they obviously won, they got to their 20 wins, and they had their really rough stretches. I think they finished 11-7 in the conference this year. They had a great win at Iowa State, which was, I don't think anyone saw that coming. You know, and if you look at the way they played the NCAA tournament, I mean, if they played like they did at UConn in that first round earlier this year, then you would come away feeling, man, there's some hope for this thing to continue to project out. Because remember, they were down, what was it, like 20-3 to Alabama in the opening round game that they're in Stores. And they come all the way back and they win it. They win. They don't need overtime. They just win it in regulation, which is a great credit to them for their kids to show resolve. And then the UConn game, you know, they're in it. I mean, they are playing UConn. Now, this isn't your typical UConn team. I think that program that Geno's got is starting to slide a little bit. But having said that, you know, they still get, you know, they are pushing UConn pretty hard all the way up into the middle of the third quarter until they just kind of run out of gas, and then they lose by like 15 or whatever it was. So, and you know, Nikki's got a couple of transfers in there. She's got more height coming in, so that's a good thing for her. I think, you know, when we talk about third year being kind of that light switches on or it doesn't switch on at all, this is kind of an important year for Nikki in terms of, can she get that program up to championship levels where Baylor was always expecting it? What, you know, the incredible run that Kim had with umpteen consecutive regular season championships and then umpteen number of appearances in the championship game with X number of wins. I think it was like 10 out of 11 or whatever it was. And so I think from Nikki's standpoint that she has to just get this thing to a level of, can it compete and with Texas? And because Oklahoma had a good year too, even though this is going to be their last year in the league, will they have enough to overcome those programs? Will they have enough to overcome those programs to compete for the conference championship? That includes Iowa State. I do not expect BYU, Cincinnati, Central Florida, or Houston, the four new schools, to really have an impact on or have a say in the conference race. Those programs have been pretty mediocre over the last several years, maybe a couple of tournaments mixed in there, but there's nothing great coming out of those programs and what they're going to bring to at least the women's basketball front for next year. So there's an opportunity for Nikki to get this thing going in the right direction to where it's going to get back on top and compete for the Big 12. And then think about how this conference is going to look after Texas and Oklahoma leave.
It's going to be a huge difference.
It's going to be a huge difference, and they're all, but it also creates an opportunity for them to become the top of the throne, because you're not going to really have much of a challenge. I mean, your greatest challenge, I mean, West Virginia is a solid program. So there's nothing, so that's your challenge there with West Virginia. Iowa State's going to be typically good as long as Bill Fennelly is there. But then when you get to the other schools in the league, TCU just changed coaches, this year. And then you look at the other programs in the league. This is a real opportunity for Nikki to vault to the top. She's hit the portal pretty hard. There obviously has to be a team that has to be, you know, more skilled, that has to score a lot more And if they can get more productivity around the block, I think they'll be in better shape. I mean, obviously, time will tell, but I think next year, even in the transition year, if you will, with the four new schools coming in, Texas and Oklahoma in their last year, that she's got an opportunity to get them in the race. And of course, we don't know what the conference schedule is going to look like and how many games they're actually going to play when you got 14 teams in it. But at the same time, I think, which means you're not going to play everybody. Or if you do, you're only playing somebody once, and you're either going to get them in Waco or you're going to have to go on the road to their place. That's kind of similar to what the SEC has done with its 14-game schedule. Everybody plays everybody except for these one-offs. You know, you're home and home with, like, your quote-unquote conference or your division. And then you're playing – and then maybe you're playing the East teams – you know, once or whatever, and they just kind of split up where you're going, that sort of thing. But my point is that, you know, I think Nikki has a real opportunity. I think she knows that too, that look, getting to the NCAA tournament might be the standard for a lot of programs, but it's not what it was for Baylor under Kim. And I think if, and we can still talk about whether or not Kim's shadow still oversees this program, or at least hovers to some extent. And I would say that it does to an extent, but I think the way that Nikki, you know, makes the shadow disappear is all she, in my opinion, all she has to do is get one of these teams this year or maybe next year in the new look league to the Sweet 16. And then I think that's at least to the Sweet 16. And then I think the Kim Mulkey stuff will go away. It obviously didn't help that Kim wins the national title in her second year at LSU, because then everyone goes, nice going, Mac Rhodes. That sort of thing. But as I said, it takes two to tangle for something to collapse, and Kim certainly did her part.
Yes.
But having said that, this can't be about Kim. This has to be about Nikki. And this has to be about Nikki taking on the attitude of, I can get this thing going there. I mean, obviously her job's not in jeopardy. I know she spoke to that, you know, when they were going through that rough stretch in February, which was kind of odd, but I think that was because they weren't playing well. And of course, all the Mulkey stuff was going on. I think LSU was undefeated at the time, so she probably heard that and was getting freaked out by it. But I'm like, but she's taking her team to the tournament in her first 2 years. Her job is not in jeopardy. The only way that Nikki Collins' job becomes in jeopardy is if Baylor stops making the NCAA tournament and has to go to the WNIT. If that happens, then she has a problem.
Yeah, and you brought up 2 points, I think. Number one is that women's basketball tends to be more top-heavy than men's basketball.
Yeah.
And so the regular season and getting into the top half of the tournament bracket is really a big thing in women's basketball. I mean, it's a big thing in men's basketball, too.
Right.
But that is a huge thing that you don't want to end up. You'd really just as soon not be playing UConn in the second round.
Well, no, that right? No, you don't. But at the same time, you have to. But I will say this. I think the women's game, and it's still top-heavy, you're right, because of all the familiar faces that are winning. But I think it was great, you know, to see, you know, everyone had pegged that this was pretty much like a South Carolina coronation.
Mm-hmm.
And they got beat in the Final Four in the national semifinals, and LSU wound up winning it, you know. But it was great to see, like, a team like Iowa get to the Final Four for the first time in forever, and play for the national title, even though that national title game wasn't close. And it was great to see LSU just from a difference. So I think the women's game is starting to become filled with more parity when you see different teams. And I think that's what the NCAA and what people are across college basketball on the women's side have always been hoping for. If it's always going to be the same 6 to 10 teams, then no one's going to watch it because they're going to get bored by it. But if you start to see parity, then maybe that changes the interest. Now, is that going to change it to, like, interest in, like there is in men's basketball? No, not even close. But it can add a specter, and it can offer athletic programs across the country that if you put the resources in it, your program can compete and get to a higher level, and that's always going to be a good thing. And I think that's what – but in Baylor's – just getting back to Baylor's case, obviously they're not at the standard where they were always in at least the Elite Eight or going to Final Fours or winning the national championship like they did in 2005, 2012, 2019. Okay. But if they're making the tournament and they're winning a couple of games, all that sort of stuff, and they're making consistent runs, that's all you can ask of it, because the tournament, as we know, is a crapshoot, as Baylor unfortunately found out last year against South Dakota State.
All right, and the other thing that I wanted to mention before we jump on is that, you know, it's over now, but the old Big 12 10-team things, that is gone now. The basketball schedule was really perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, you know, all these really good teams. You got to see the top teams in the country, and you did it home and home.
Right.
And, like, Baylor versus Kansas, you know, I mean, that home and home, that was amazing. And mm-hmm. that's going to be gone, because with the new teams coming in, you're just not going to be able to play everybody twice now.
I think, you know, I think as we switch over to men's basketball here in Scott Drew's program, I think, you know, the scheduling part of that is, I think that the Big 12 is smart enough to know that it will always schedule home and home with, even with the four new teams. You know, this year will be unto itself. But even with this year, I think the Big 12 is smart enough to know that it has to put a home and home with Baylor and Kansas together because of that rivalry, the way that's developed over the years. And then you'll see, and then of course Baylor will keep its home and home with Tech. That's just a natural home and home with TCU. That's also natural. I would suspect that they will keep the same thing with Oklahoma State. I think from a regional standpoint, it'll always be that way, with those schools for Baylor. So I wouldn't expect that to change too much, but you know, it's been an interesting offseason for Scott Drew's program because, and we saved the best for last, by the way.
Yeah, and by the way, we went from three coaches to two coaches to one coach because Drew's been there since 2003.
Right. So, you know, with Scott's program, I know people are going to feel like, well, you know, they had Keontae George. They had a chance to go into the second weekend of the tournament. And, of course, the season kind of unraveled because their low post defense was a mess. You know, Keontae George, who's going to be picked in the first round of the NBA draft on Thursday night, so keep that in mind. But if you look at that, and with his ankle injury, and he just wasn't really the same toward the end of the season, you know, that sort of thing, they got knocked out in the second round by Creighton. And it was a good season, no question. I mean, they finished 11-6. They just, I think, you know, one thing that we always know about Scott Drew's teams, they're always going to have guards. They're always going to be able to score, which they did. But, you know, but on the other side, their defense, which had been really good during that three stretch, you know, that run of 3 years where the COVID year where they didn't make it, or nobody made the tournament because it was canceled. And of course, you know, last year or 2 years ago when they won the national title, and even though last year's team also got knocked out by North Carolina in the second round, that's still a really good team. It was just a ridiculous, that was one of the best college games I ever watched in person between Baylor and North Carolina in Fort Worth. But, you know, this team, though, had flaws, and the injuries were what they were, but it really came down to them not playing very good defense. And that was something that they hung their hat on during that run of those 3 years. Really good tip of the spear, like what Davion Mitchell always provided for this program. And they've got to get that defensive swagger back if they want to make deep runs in the NCAA tournament. And that's just not where it was. They just got picked apart. I think the one telling thing for me, Stephen, was the home finale against Iowa State that they lost. And they were really never in that game, as we all know. And, you know, they lost by double digits, and they just could not stop anything on the low block. And it was the same thing when they turned around and faced Iowa State 5 days later in the Big 12 tournament in Kansas City. Couldn't stop them down low. And of course, this roster experienced tremendous turnover. Adam Flagler declared for the NBA draft. He's gone. LJ Cryer technically declared for the draft, but he also went into the portal, and he wound up going to Houston. So Baylor actually will see him either down there in Houston or in Waco, depending on what the schedule looks like this coming season. you know, Keontae George, obviously everybody knew that he was going to declare for the draft, and he did, so he's gone. You know, and it was just, you know, just a lot of turnover. So here's who they bring in. They bring in Miro Little, talented freshman or talented player from Finland via the way of Sunrise Christian in Wichita, Kansas. Has a lot of talent going for him. There's no question about that. Then you look at Jacoby Walter from Branson, Missouri, who was at that clinic over in McKinney. You know, these are guys that are ranked basically in the Rivals top 25, both of them in the Rivals top 25 of the 150 top prospects across the country. Jaden Nunn, they get the transfer from Virginia Commonwealth who comes in. He's a lanky guard. That's going to help as well. You know, RJ Dennis, the transfer from Toledo, that's a huge pickup for them at guard there. That changes a lot of things for them. That gets them back in that top heavy part. And of course, Jalen Bridges, who withdrew from the draft, but remains and was looking at some pro opportunities back in, over in Australia, decides to return to Baylor. He announced that last week. And so here's what I think this roster is going to look like. It's going to be top heavy with the guards. There's not going to be a lot of physical force down low. I mean, your two big options are going to be Yevs Missy, who's also coming in with Walter, and Little. Then you've got Ojiwana, who's there and got some time last year. Had some good moments there, but like all freshman bigs, they're going to have flashes where they look good, and then there's going to be flashes where they completely disappear on the floor. But I think if he gets better, then that's going to change everything. I think, you know, the one thing with Jonathan Chamoa-Chachua is going to be, what does he look like now that he's a year removed from coming off the injury? I kind of equate his catastrophic knee injury kind of like a pitcher coming off a ulnar collateral ligament tear, or Tommy John surgery, as everyone likes to call it. You know, Jonathan, Everyday John, was coming off a really bad injury, multiple ligament tears, there was nerve damage, all that stuff. So we know that when he came back, there was that euphoria for the quick start that he got. And then once reality settled in, he kind of went, you know. And I think what's going to be important for him is his conditioning, working on his game, and what effect can he give you in the block? I'm really hesitant to say that you can get X and you can get Y from JTT this coming season, because you just won't know it until you see it. You can hear murmurs all you want about, well, he's doing this in practice and he looks good doing this and he looks good doing that. It really is encouraging. That's great. And you hope that you hear that, okay? Whether it's the truth or not, but in his case, it's going to be when the lights come on. And it doesn't matter if Baylor's going to be, you know, even if Baylor plays like a Stephen F. Austin or Abilene Christian or somebody like that, I want to see what he looks like just playing a game start to finish. And can he hold up? Because once he gets out there in early November, you know, it's going to be a different story. And this is going to be a tough enough schedule for Baylor as it is, you know, with everything that they've got going on. They've got the rumored game with Duke that they were trying to get settled on. I don't know if that's finalized or not. You know, they got the preseason NIT that's going to include Pitt and Oregon State. So they've got enough challenges on their schedule. But I think this team will be good at the guard spot. I think Dennis will probably take over as your point, which I think is helpful because that takes some of the load off of Merrill Little. But I think your two X factors on this team are going to be Langston Love and Everyday John. If those guys are consistent, then there's depth. And I think the only issue is that can Baylor get it right on defense? Because if they're not getting it right on defense, we're going to see the same type of season next year like we saw this year. Doesn't mean that it's a, you know, all what's wrong with Scott Drew's program, because he went for portal guys. Namely Grant Nelson, the North Dakota State center, 6'11 kid. So he was trying to get these kids, but just didn't work out. But I will say this in his behalf, and we'll talk about the NIL next week. I do know that Scott is really pushing hard to make the NIL a real viable part of his program. He knows that for Baylor's basketball program to sustain what it has enjoyed over the last 5-6 years at that really high level of basketball where it's viewed as one of the elites in college basketball, and it is, but that part has got to pick up, and Scott knows that. And I think he's doing everything in his power to really make that happen.
Well, I think that the big thing for me with Drew is that whatever he's got, he makes the most out of it. As far as being an on-the-court coach, you very seldom see the Baylor basketball team perform below their capabilities. He manages to get everything out of his players.
He does, yeah. And he'll know how to make adjustments. I still go back to, like, the team that wound up losing to Gonzaga in the second round of the tournament a few years ago. They beat Syracuse, and then they lost to Gonzaga out in Salt Lake City. That was a team where they were relying a lot on Tristan Clark, and then went down with the knee injury against Iowa State.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first Big 12 game of the year that season, I think it was. First or second. And, of course, Tristan's career was never the same after that. But when he went down, they went from an outside-in type of team to basically a jump-shooting team, and they saved their season and got to the tournament and stole a win. So it's a great thing for them. I mean, I think this, too, with this team, is there. I think there's better depth with the guards this year than maybe what they had last year. And last year they had a lot of decent guards. But I think, though, that they have a chance to be a better shooting team than last year's team, because last year's team could be really, really good and then really, really bad. And that was really because when Keyonte George was on, he was awesome. And when he wasn't, he was really bad.
Well, I think that if they can figure out some way to keep people from driving to the basket, you know, that's their big thing, is like inside the paint. That they got handled some last year.
Yeah.
Anyway, you want to close it out for us?
Sure. So obviously Baylor's final weekend of official visitors is coming up this weekend. We'll have a preview for that. We're always on the commitment watch. And stay tuned for next Monday, where I'm going to have my preseason game-by-game or way-too-early prediction for the upcoming season. And we will talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.